Welcome to another podcast on Fire Network, bonus episode on the Lake House in South Korea's 2000 production, The Magical Romance Il Mary, is remade in America, or was remade in America as The Lake House. My name is Kenny B, and this is the website exclusive bonus episode we announced at the end of the What's Korean Cinema episode on Il Mary. And with you still, therefore, is me and my less-than-chuffed co-host, Paul Quinn, as we head into the discussion of the remake. Hello, buddy.
Hello. Less-than-chuffed, that's a bit harsh, you know. It needs to be talked about. I have things to say, as you will hear, and I'm happy to say them.
Yep, and then they are said, and they're on the record. You mentioned, by the way, in the main discussion that Il Mary and My Sassy Girl were among the four remakes that were bought. Bought for American remakes. I don't know if you lump in the Tale of Two Sisters remake within those four, but that's only three. So what would be the fourth? Wasn't there a Kiefer Sutherland horror movie that was based on a Korean horror film, something Mirror, Into the Mirror?
There was, yeah. Kiefer's version was called Mirrors, and again, I've probably said it on podcasts with you guys before, but I hated the Tale of Two Sisters remake. I hated the Into the Mirror remake even more. How I feel about this remains to be told in a minute.
And of course, as we've detailed before, A Tale of Two Sisters was remade as The Uninvited, but it was not the remake of the Jun Ji Hyun psychological horror film The Uninvited that hasn't been remade, not in English in America anyway, so to add to confusion.
But as you say, this, you know, Il Mary was the fourth film that had its right published or purchased for a remake. The other three prior to it were, I've already said, High Dharma, which is essentially a story about a comedy about a group of monks, My Sassy Girl, which was remade and quickly, thankfully, kind of disappeared. And the third one was My Wife is a Gangster.
I was about to say, where is Shiri in this discussion?
Well, exactly, you know, nowhere to be seen in terms of remakes. You know, Shiri was the big hitter that was seen as pushing Korean cinema more in fitting with Hollywood. So they're more likely to grab stuff like this, I imagine, rather than if they remade Shiri, they'd just be making another film that, you know, they've basically already made over here anyway. So, but those were the three: High Dharma, My Wife is a Gangster, and My Sassy Girl. And as far as I know, My Sassy Girl is the only one that was remade, but don't necessarily quote me on that, because, you know, my knowledge of Hollywood cinema of the 2000s isn't as huge as it should be.
And of course, Korea remakes, maybe perhaps not only English films, but they remake Chinese films every now and again. So it's not like if they see potential in something to be made locally, then they pursue it. So it's not a foul thing, but you need to make it good, I suppose. Okay, The Lake House from 2006. Again, Il Mary was 2000, so it only took 6 years. Plot from Letterboxd: a lonely doctor, played by Sandra Bullock, who once occupied an unusual lakeside home, begins exchanging love letters with its former resident, a frustrated architect, played by Keanu Reeves. They must try to unravel the mystery behind their extraordinary romance before it's too late. And the Letterboxd plotting didn't hint at this, but obviously it's not a spoiler. So she is, in this case, Sandra Bullock, receiving letters from 2006, while he is writing and receiving letters in his timeline, which is 2004. Mailbox magic! We did this section essentially in the main episode, but I thought I'd repeat its earnings and critical reception. So it was released in 2006. Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock had struck up good chemistry in the action hit Speed in 1994. So this was their reunion, and it was budgeted at $40 million and earned nearly $115 million US dollars worldwide. So I think it must have turned some kind of profit. Let's just say that promotional push equaled another 30 or 40 million. I think there's still profit in there, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how you can break it down too. Anyway, the Lake House has a Rotten Tomatoes rating that is hovering around 35%. So it got mixed reviews both from users and proper critics. Roger Ebert, the late Roger Ebert, gave it a good review. 3.5 out of 4 stars, I believe. He wasn't bothered by the logical inconsistencies and thought it was a time travel story that worked on emotional and not temporal logic. Yeah. The New York Times called it wondrously illogical, but not without its charms. It was elegant without being showy. We never mentioned the director of The Lake House, even though I know nothing of him, but he deserves a shout out. He's an Argentine film director called Alejandro Agresti. So that's only proper to get his name in there. Well, the New York Times also said that they thought the stars displayed chemistry over a decade later still. And other critics like OC Register's David Germain said it was a tearjerker that elicits more chuckles than tears. So obviously he didn't like it. What did we think of it? Well. We talked about Il Mary, that we connected to its sparse, gentle nature in the hands of Korean makers. But the remake never achieves that gentle magic dealing with distanced love. You know, the leads are kept apart due to the setup of the story, as they should. And I just feel personally that it's pushing some buttons too hard, and when I wanted a gentler touch. It seems to struggle to cope with the little to no on-screen interaction between Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves, which is a brave thing. Keep your leads apart until it logically makes sense that they are in the same frame. So they insert way too many quirky tricks to make sure that they are acting together in a few more scenes than necessary, which I didn't like. Korean film did that occasionally. Ironically though, their actual physical one-on-one in the story, their actual real scene where the characters do meet, they have chemistry still when they're together. But that's the one scene that, well, yeah, okay, good. Like, build on that. Or no, you didn't build on that. Damn. Because I think they actually have good, relaxed chemistry together. But that's the only part that works, really, for me. So
I have had so many problems with The Lake House in terms of, you know, I'm biased. I only watched it originally. I bought the DVD for £1 at a charity shop, and after watching it, gave it back to the charity shop. I only watched it because I wanted to compare it with Il Mary. I didn't hate it on rewatching it for this podcast. I didn't hate it as much as I did the first time I saw it. I despised it the first time I saw it. But again, that was because, you know, I was go Korea. This time I sort of tried to take a longer, gentler look, and I still don't rate it, but I didn't hate it as much. I think the chemistry between Sandra and Keanu works because they've worked well together in the past, and they do work well together, but I didn't buy it at all. I didn't buy the premise at all. They don't sell it. I'm still not convinced that they're even close to being in love. The exposition, there are a lot of scenes where dialogue's used to tell you exactly what's going on the screen that you're watching, and you can see what's going on, and I found that grating. The great thing about Il Mare is that there are a lot of scenes where there's no dialogue at all. You just see what's happening, and that's the way it should be. The gentleness is all gone, and there are several smaller elements that annoyed me deeply. I don't think the characters should have been written as having met before.
Right, which is a thing they insert in this movie, quite a substantial scene set in 2004, which is the invention of this film.
You know, and their interactions in that scene are decent enough. They really are, but the characters should not have met. It just offset my shoulder to a degree where I'm just almost cringing. There are other elements where Keanu goes to plant a tree outside a building that hasn't been built in his time, and Sandra's at the building in her time, the 2 years later. And as she's standing in the rain outside the building, the tree suddenly appears in her perspective. That annoyed them.
They play up the magic. They make the choice, which is their choice, to play up the magic really literally, which I was bothered by as well. So we'll get into that. The problem is also when we're doing this show, we're watching them so close. Like, I mean, I was sort of biased in a way too. Like, does the remake even have a chance? Because I watched Ilmeri 2 days prior, you know?
True.
But you know, I sit down, hopefully it may take chances with the story, hopefully we'll get some decent chemistry and it will be fluffy and pleasant enough, you know? I'm not the angry man that I once was either. So, because we've grown, Paul. We've grown into old, we're emotionally available, man.
Yeah, in desperate need of some sort of emotional content.
So you go into it with an open mind of sorts there, because you know what you liked in the Korean film, so let's see what an American perspective made by an Argentine director gives you. Because the remake, if you're going to be honest here, think of the market it occupies. It's not for the fans of the original, necessarily. Yeah. They don't want to catch the audiences that may have seen it in an art house theater, where it played for one night in 2001 in America. That's not the audience they're after. They're after to catch new audiences that are unaware of that this is a remake. Obviously, the credits need to state that this is based on the film Ilmer, which is contractual. But it is a different market. So you got to give it sort of that leeway that it's trying to catch new audiences. And you don't need luminous faces, but you need relatable faces. You need faces that feel grounded. And I think Sandra Bullock can very much work as an actress to be grounded. She's not this luminous movie star necessarily. That's why I think she gained popularity through Speed and all the romantic films and her dramatic work. She's very grounded, and changing her character from a very young character that was an actress to a doctor, I have no problem with that, because they're trying to make their own. They're trying to make it fit. They're trying to make perhaps what is a more common, plausible, fitting profession for a woman at her age. You know, she's not playing 18, 19 like Jun Ji Hyun's character seems to be. You know, so those change-ups as the sort of basic setup, have no problem with that. It's not betraying the original intent to change her profession. They can't change his, because the fact that this house was built by an architect, not him, but his father, is part of the central premise. You know, so I felt an openness. It's fine if you want different entrances into the story elements, or even to do new story elements. But here's the kicker. Just make it engaging. And that's what I didn't find that they did. And I think you and I would probably have the same note on when they first do get the first letters and kind of feel confused about, like, he is there in 2004 picking up this letter from the previous person who lived there, he thinks. And she says, like, I'm sorry about the paw prints, they were already there, so I couldn't clean them. And then he says, like, what paw prints? That's my Keanu.
Very good, by the way.
And then that all happens. And here's the problem. They do this every now and again in the Korean film, but a lot more in the American film. We see what happens and understand it, but they need to add the element of voiceover to over-explain it. And I think that's not a good thing. You don't trust your audiences to pick up on that neat visual cue, because it's kind of neat that, oh, it's happening. So, you know, let the audiences have that voiceover in their heads.
I mean, from my point of view, I've always had a big problem, you know, I have with unnecessary extra exposition. And the hardest part of watching The Lake House was that unnecessary exposition. You know, I constantly felt like I was being treated like a child and having everything explained, and it grated on me to the nth degree. And you know, not having seen it for how many years, I'm not sure. The one thing I remember about the film was how much that annoyed me the first time I saw it, more than anything else. You know, I barely remembered that the characters had actually met in real life before, which annoyed me as well. But my memory of that was clouded. my memory of the nasty, nasty narrated exposition and dialogue exposition just has never left me, and annoys.
And it's not a too artful choice, you know what I mean? Like, it's clear enough without the added, like, poor Prince, what is she talking about?
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because it's not terribly challenging. Film is an audio AV medium, you know, audiovisual medium, so let the visuals help you, and let those be charming, you know. So then you can get a little bit more acceptance of the choices the remake does. I won't spoil this, but there's a key event in the beginning of the movie that involves a car accident. And they feature that in the Korean film, but much, much later. So yeah, why not? Let's change it up. But that's like a sign of being secure in your material for a bit. But then they show insecurity in the material. And I have a feeling that it might not have come necessarily from the director. That sounds like a gotta fix it in post. Audiences won't get it. Like the 13-year-olds that we want to watch this film. And it's a shame. Because that would have been nicer. I've sort of hammered on Keanu. I have to say, I love him as a person. I love him occasionally as an actor, but I also love if we look at other material, other genres. But I love also how dedicated and a skillful action star he is. He goes into the physical preparation of action films, whether talking Matrix back in the day, talking John Wick nowadays. He's extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. At his age, to be as physical as he is fantastic. Really is. He's found his forte in that. So being a wooden actor isn't necessarily a problem in movies like John Wick. But when he's going to play down to earth and natural, and having that monotonous wooden delivery shows that he doesn't have quite natural charisma playing an everyday man. So I'm not being immature about it. I think I certainly, in Bill and Ted, the Bill and Ted movies, in particular the two first movies, he's excellent. That's material for him. That's material he understands, and that's material he can engage in quite a bit, and he's super funny in it. But here, playing everyday, the everyday man is makes it a clunky performance.
Totally. And you know, the other thing from my point of view is that even in terms of his vocals, they're almost monotone through the whole film, and it's her performance is okay. You know, they obviously get on well as people, and I like Keanu as a person, but he was the wrong person for this role. Monotone, never changing vocals, flat as, like I was saying to you earlier on in a message, just after I rewatched this and put the normal TV in the UK back on, the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still was on, which has got Keanu in it, and he plays an emotionless extraterrestrial.
Which might work very well.
And it works as well as you would hope it would, because he's meant to be emotionless. But the tone of his voice through that whole film is exactly the same as it is throughout The Lake House. And you just think, ramp it up just a little bit. Just go on, crack a smile, even. Come on.
And he's a charming motherfucker. He really is a natural in real life and a very down-to-earth person. I don't think those stories are false, that he uses public transport, doesn't live an extravagant lifestyle, donates quite a bit of his salary, because he's certainly, back in the Matrix days, he was a very well-paid actor.
Yeah.
And I buy that. I really do. I mentioned it before, certainly to you, but if you want to check out something like a bit of a revealing performance. Well, two really. His guest role in Always Be My Maybe, the romantic comedy where he plays himself, like this pompous version of himself. Super funny. I remember he was an abusive husband in Sam Raimi's film The Gift with Cate Blanchett. Thought that was very good. That was like an, okay, now he's digging into this a lot better. It feels different, feels scary. It can happen, but he's material reliant, I think. Some of the other problems where I think the movie pushes too hard, and this is not post-production messing things up. We never mentioned it in the Korean film discussion. But there's an early scene where Jun Ji-hyun's character writes back to Lee Jung Jae's character that that it snowed on a particular day. So she proves that this is happening. You know, I can tell you that on this day, maybe on this time, it will snow heavily, because she has a photograph of that. And they do that in this film as well. What I don't like that they do, the scene where that happens is Keanu is having a meal at his home, and he notices the snowflakes outside his glass house, lake house. And for no apparent reason, the director does a major push in and a shocked face on Keanu. And I thought, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm all for the American film making its own choices. But why stop being gentle? It's okay to be gentle about this. It's okay to be sweet about a moment like this. He can be like to himself, like I'll be damned. But it's more like, like it's a horror reaction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's an odd choice to make for this type of story that contains gentle magic and romance combo, you know? And no, it really didn't work for me. It really like killed that moment quite a bit. And also, I'm sure you have notes on this. It's their choice, but I wish they had not displayed the magic in motion. You know what I mean? By having the lever of the mailbox.
Ugh.
So why is that a bad choice? Maybe not versus the Korean film that didn't play up the magic. The mailbox didn't move, shake, or didn't have a lever indicating that there is mail waiting for you. But why is that a bad choice, you think, to be very literal about the magic happening in real life here?
It doesn't need to be done. It's almost, and like you say, I don't know if this was director or others or all of the above, but the whole Sandra Bullock, especially standing in front of the mailbox and seeing the magic happen, you know, and talking, being still convinced that there's someone hiding behind a bush doing it and shouting at them, it feels contrived. It feels like they didn't believe audiences would believe the magic unless they actually saw it. And the whole point of the magic in Ilmari is the fact that you don't see it, you know, they open the mailbox and there's something there, you know, it's that surprise, that enthusiasm for the actual thing rather than the enthusiasm for showing that, oh bang, someone's 2 years away at this exact moment and they've just put something in the mailbox and put the little flag down.
It's a strange thing. I can see that they watch Ilmari and see like, well, that mailbox looks way too fancy. We want a grounded story. So let's put it in a proper mailbox there. But it just looks like a proper natural object. So how do we emphasize that it's its thing? How do we make the object linger in audiences' minds? So I can understand the reasoning, but it doesn't work at all.
No, it doesn't.
The Korean mailbox, yeah, as we said in the main discussion, it might have never existed unless someone made a custom mailbox of that kind. You know, it might not have been the mailbox standard ever in Korean history. You know, it's such a striking visual, but they never do anything with it. There's no twirling effects around it. There's no shaking of the mailbox. It's more on the surprise factor for us as well, that there is something in there. And I thought they overplayed their card in the lake house so much, and it wasn't funny either. The right word is contrived, that they treat it as a quirky thing, a comedic thing, because they also know that she's a good comedian, but it really did not work very well. And then they start to increase the interaction, of course, which means letters upon letters. They increase that by having the back and forth, the questions and answers and observations sent to each other take place in voiceover. So they do that in the American film. They did that to an extent in the Korean film, but they showed us enough correspondence, Paul, and not all correspondence, for it just felt like instant messaging after a while.
Yeah, totally.
It didn't feel magical and natural. It just felt like, oh yeah, they're on the phone now, or they're on chat now.
On that same thing, if you take Ilmari, I don't know, they're different films, but if you take Ilmari, those little narrated sections of letters, they're just they're tiny little snapshots. They're not the whole thing. They're just little snapshots, and they're mostly surrounded by some sort of a visual sort of montage with some, you know, very pretty music. And it sort of just makes it all fit, and you're not overdone with listening to narration after narration after narration after narration. And considering how many letters Sandra and Keanu said to each other, it feels like, you say, it's just you're being bludgeoned by text message after text message after text message, and that annoys anybody, really.
And it didn't feel like there was this growing affection necessarily, not a natural progression of that. In a scene that echoes the Korean film, where I believe Keanu's character has asked her to walk around the city, you know, because he knows the city a little bit more. It's set in Chicago. So she walks around using his letters as a guiding thing. And I thought it was very premature, because I didn't feel the affection. Where she, over voiceover, because it's from a letter, says that, "I wish we could have done this walk together." Feels very premature. And I was very sad that that didn't work, because I'm a sucker for sweet, well-done romantic beats. I didn't feel that at all, so that just should it have come at all, or at a later point in the film, you know, who's to say, but it really killed off any momentum, I thought, to drop that she felt the romance and magic in her heart, but it certainly had not reached us at all. And, you know, the symbolism of not having the ability to connect with what's there in your life. They talk about building the stairs of the lake house onto the lake, talking about the symbolism of, you know, you have to connect things. That felt very clunky as well. It was kind of interesting, though, that in the Korean film, those stairs to the beach, they were already built. Here they talk about, well, there needs to be stairs.
Yeah.
But do they build the stairs? No, they don't.
Oh.
So it's one of those, like, I don't think you concluded your thought process there, Makers. Because I thought that was a prime thing to do in a montage or something, to have Keanu plan for the extension of the house that was already there in the Korean film. And I think that would have been fine, clunky symbolism aside, that at least they did it. They completed the picture, they completed the structure. So,
on that same note, in terms of the clunky nature, you know, like you say, that came too early, etc., etc. What I also think came at not only the wrong time, but shouldn't have been there at all. There's a scene where Keanu's driving along, and, you know, he's voicing what he's saying to her, to himself, and he says a humongously terrible line that sort of says, "Don't worry, kid, I'll find a way for us to be together. I'll get to you." And you just think, this is all so unnecessary. It's not like the two of you are actually in love. It doesn't play like that. You haven't won me over yet, and you can't do that without having won me over first. And it's things like that that constantly pop up. There are too many to even mention again and again and again. It pulled me out of my immersion. It pulled me out of believing in this couple. I didn't buy them as a couple at all.
Yeah, I very much agree. A few other unfinished beats, or maybe unnecessary inclusions. For instance, the character of Mona, played by Lynn Collins. She works at the same construction site in an administrative position as Keanu Reeves' character. And she's clearly horny for him, for attention. And she seems like this quirky character to have around, but she's not a fun character to have around. She's this very sparsely used possible second romantic interest for Keanu, and she's not good as comedic relief either. She has an awkward place in the narrative, and she disappears without having a true purpose either. After the party scene, she's gone. And yes, at that point, I don't think they would have a place in each other's lives, but I don't think that character was needed. I wonder if they looked at the Korean film and saw that one scene role of a female overseeing construction in Ilmari. Jun Ji-hun has a conversation with her. I wonder if they looked at that. Okay, write something about that so we can have a conflict, a romantic conflict. Clunky, so awfully awfully done. Like there's no fault of the actress here. She's game for this, but that character has no real purpose for the film and in the film. Let's fast forward to, I mean, you can't have one scene that works and save the film, but it really is. They're one-on-one, which I know you don't like in concept. They are at the same party, and they connect. They don't know, because the timeline hasn't changed, where she goes, aha, that's him, because the letters aren't
the
thing. She doesn't know yet. But they're one-on-one because she's quite distraught. She's not happy in her current relationship. They're one-on-one as they sit there and do actually a good, long, one-shot interaction on the patio or porch. I may overstate it when I say excellent, but I loved that they still look comfortable together. Uninterrupted. There's no, the camera's just sitting there watching them listen to each other. Yes, he's still a bit wooden and monotonous, but he really likes acting with her. It felt more natural, felt more down to earth. Granted, it is a new scene, and perhaps it is overplaying the fact that they connect as deeply as they do in that scene where they actually meet. But it was really nice to, because the critics say, like, they still have chemistry, and I was like, well, they need to be in the same scene to have chemistry. And it turns out, yeah, they do.
Well, they are, yeah.
But yeah, anything else you want to say about that scene, if regardless of, like set aside the fact that you don't like that it's structurally there, was it nice to see actors just having a back uninterrupted back and forth, I guess?
I'll be honest, in terms of chemistry between Sandra and Keanu, you know it's there. If you've seen them in Speed or whatever else, they've got chemistry naturally. They obviously get on quite well together. So it was nice to see the chemistry there, because that's really virtually the only time you get any chemistry in this film. I wish the premise hadn't been the way it was, because I don't think it was necessary. But without that scene at the same time, that there would be no mention of chemistry because of the way it's entirely structured.
You know, it was never supposed to be a two-hander in the Korean version. You know, they have two or three little fleeting scenes together and one-on-one, but that it's not extensive at all in the Korean
film.
Not
at all. But, you know, even in their separation in El Mare, you can feel the chemistry between the characters. It was palpable to me. It's not in The Lake House at all. Not at all. And that's just clunky direction. Let's be honest about it.
And after that one-on-one scene, the director and the writers and everyone involved, they really go off the rails in terms of squeezing in scenes where Keanu and Sandra appear in the same frame together, even though they are not, they're still corresponding. But they force two or three additional scenes in there. They're sitting at a separate, in separate park, on park benches. But they're not there together. They're simply writing the future letters, and I thought that was so forced, that was so cringy to see them. I could just see, we need to get more scenes of Keanu and Sandra in there, because that equals blah 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 $1 million, and like
exactly.
And I thought that was so overemphasizing matters. I realized that you need to play a little bit in the correspondence rather than just picking up the letters and reading the letters, but they were playing way too much with split screen and putting them in the same scene when they aren't, and it really didn't do anything for the chemistry or the building affection for each other either. I think I had checked out of that quite distinctly by that point. Because everything is very head on and, you know, nailed in and shut. There's no sparse nature here. There's no bravery to be vague here, which I'm very sad about, actually. Because it could have worked very well, you know, it could have worked very well. Just let the material be a little bit more, I come back to the word sparse, not like abstract and difficult, but just sparse and natural, and let it flow naturally rather than shout at the top of your lungs.
Exactly. I mean, in terms of that, the one thing that on the rewatch that kept occurring to me was how much the lake house was reminiscent of a TV movie, you know, something that would be on late afternoon on a Sunday that, you know, your mother would watch. You'd be like, what are you watching that for? It felt more like that to me because it was so pushed the way a lot of TV dramas are, more than a big romance film, which, you know, Il Mare wasn't a big film, but it was played like, you know, a feature, a cinematic piece rather than, you know, a flat TV thing. And that's my undying feeling about The Lake House. It feels like a TV movie.
Yeah, and certainly nothing that sticks with you. To end on a positive note, obviously Christopher Plummer can't be bad in anything. You know, obviously he's going to be at the very least sufficient, and that's good. Yep. Playing Keanu Reeves's father. And that leads to an emotional scene later where I think Keanu does very well displaying grief, because he keeps it internal, locked up for as long as he can, that emotion, and then boom, he needs to let go. Very well played, to be honest. Very well played. I thought that wasn't melodrama template 1A before us, so props to him for getting into that moment, to be honest. But otherwise, a forgettable remake amongst those who have been remade. Is it the better one? Out of those movies we mentioned that have been remade, is this the better one? My Sassy Girl, Uninvited, Mirrors?
Oh, that is such a difficult question.
Because you don't want to rewatch any of them, so.
I don't want to rewatch any of them. It's no worse than the worst, and it's no better than the better, and I use better very loosely. None of them have worked for me. It's certainly not as bad as Kiefer's Mirrors.
Was that any good, the original Into the Mirror?
It's very interesting. It's not perfect. It's quite flawed. It certainly has its moments. And certainly in terms of horror, the opening scene in the Korean version will actually make you want to watch the film. I won't spoil it, but there's a female character who ends up quite the worst for wear. And it's classic Korean horror. The remake changes that character, and from the very outset, it sits badly. It feels like, you know, a schlock Hollywood horror that's just following cliche after cliche after cliche. So, it, you know, out of them all, I'd say Mirrors, from my point of view, is probably the worst, closely followed by My Sassy Girl. The Uninvited and The Lake House, much of a muchness, you know. Ask me on a different day, I'll pick a different one as the worst of the two.
No, neither is my answer tomorrow.
Yeah, well, there you go. The easier, shorter.
Do we know if any other Korean film is heading for an American remake, or that chatter seems to be more sporadic than anything else?
It's really gone to next to nothing.
Because it's not like, I mean, Train to Busan, possibly. I've heard some rumblings about that, but maybe that has died out as well.
Before COVID, there were rumblings of a couple of films. It all seemed to die a death, and then nothing was said anymore. So from what I've seen, I haven't seen mention of anything that's actually going ahead at the moment. Let's hope that changes, but it's certainly not the way they would have wanted to do it back in the day when suddenly it was like, oh, you know, because at the end of the day, things are different now. You know, you go to any film festival, there's going to be a Korean film in competition for awards. So it's not like they're remaking something that no one will see and they're trying to get it for their own audiences anymore. I think it's changed.
Well, anyway, that's the Lake House review for you. As for availability, throw a rock and you'll find this cheaply on DVD and Blu-ray and on digital. So if you are keen, then there's only a few clicks away. Very cheap on iTunes as well, if you just want to buy it or give it a rental.
Totally. And, you know, let's be honest, if any of you are in London and you fancy heading to Muswell Hill in about a week's time, the little charity shop on Muswell Hill Broadway will probably have a copy of The Lake House, because I'm going to take it and give it to them.
Yeah, the thing is here, to be very transparent here, Paul ordered a copy that did not arrive in time, so my legally acquired digital copy, I'm not going to tell you how, but I have the ability to rip it off its copyright protection. So I sent that to Paul so he could watch it, you know, because it wasn't streaming necessarily on Netflix or anything. But yes, we both bought a copy, but I don't think I blame Paul for returning it. I didn't like this. Can I have my pound back?
I haven't even watched it. Do you want it? You know, so there you go. And it does have to be said, the first time I bought The Lake House was in that charity shop that cost me a quid. When I bought it from Amazon, let's be honest, it actually cost me $7.49 this time. So it's gone up in value. So, you know, fair play to Keanu and Sandra.
The value of this movie is skyrocketing.
Yeah, you know. Well, maybe that'll make it better. Maybe not. No.
Anyway, thank you everybody for following us to the bonus episode discussion of The Lake House, and for enjoying a double bill of Korean cinema and American film discussion. So thanks for the coverage. We enjoyed extending it this way, giving it our honest thoughts rather than just crapping on the film for the sake of it. I was open to the fact that it might work and inject some sweetness into it, and was kind of disappointed that it really didn't do that well either. You know, a little basic sweet cloud over the film would have made it a perfectly acceptable time, I think, but no, I didn't get that either. So and even the damn ending scene is way too pronounced in the American film. Okay, you, why not I'm not gonna spoil it here, but at least the subtitles on my version of Ilmarin in HD is one of those perfect ending lines, like I have quite the story to tell you, was essentially the meaning of the final line in Ilmarin.
And just so you know, on the original, the final line was actually, I have a long story to tell you. So same thing.
Why not adopt some bravery in that regard? But hey, here it is, and that's what we thought. So thank you everybody for following us to the bonus episode. So I've been Kenny B, with me was Paul Quinn, and next time around we'll do the My Sassy Girl bonus episode. What do you say? that was the very first What's Korean Cinema ever. That was My Sassy Girl. So, but maybe we'll do that in the future. There's not a whole lot of them. It's not like it's 40 of these remakes. So maybe we can complete the collection.
You never know. I'd be willing to do anything. I don't mind talking about whatever I talk about.
Thank you for that, for being on board. And so that's us signing off. This was Kenny B, and with me was Paul Quinn.
Thanks for listening, guys. See you later.